WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross.
I'm Ringo, and I play the drums.
I'm Paul, and I play the bass.
I'm George, and I play a guitar.
I'm John, and I too play a guitar. Sometimes I play the fool.
There can never be a real Beatles reunion, not with John Lennon dead. But Paul McCartney, George Harrison, and my guest Ringo Starr reunited for a documentary called The Beatles Anthology that will be broadcast over 3 nights on ABC TV beginning November 19th. The three ex-Beatles did the closest thing they could to performing with Lennon. They completed a song he was writing before he died and recorded with a tape of Lennon singing it. To coincide with the TV broadcast, several CDs of Beatles outtakes will be released beginning this month. I spoke with Ringo Starr last June about his life before, during, and after the Beatles. He's made 11 albums since the Beatles broke up. I asked him first how he, Harrison, and McCartney reunited for the documentary.
This thing's been put together. It was first put together in 1970. A long time ago. And we're finally through Apple and Neil Aspinall, a good friend of ours, we finally put it together, but it needed something new instead of it just being like the documentary. And so we all decided to be involved ourselves. So we are interviewed also to give our side of the story. And so the follow-on for that was we were all interviewed separately. And then, of course, we decided we'd be interviewed together. And the follow-on to that was, well, why don't we make some music for it? And the problem we had with that, well, yes, it's really easy that Paul, George, and Ringo can go in the studio and make this music, but that's not the Beatles. So we needed something that, you know, it would still be the Beatles. And Yoko came up with a couple of tracks of John's that have never been out there, just demos, really. So we really worked on them to get them, you know, clean enough and usable enough, really. And we put them down on 24-track, and then we all worked with that. So it just seemed like, you know, it's a natural progression. We're all loose enough to do this together now. And it made it real easy, because now John's in it.
Through the demo?
Through the tape, yeah.
What was it like playing together again?
It was very emotional. I mean, it was very emotional, first of all, listening to John on the tape. Because he is not here, but his voice was there. And then, you know, we had to, you know, we all called each other and spoke about it. You know, we had to say, okay, well, are we going to do this? You know, it's pretty strange. And we came to the conclusion that, well, what we'll do is we'll just feel, we'll just sort of say, well, John's gone on holiday for a while or he's gone for a cup of tea, and that's how we got into it. So it felt okay, you know. But we still have the difficulty of, you know, the three of us doing anything. So it was a lifesaver, really.
Were there emotional things that had stood in the way of the three of you performing before?
Yes, we were all angry with each other.
Was it over money or music or personality?
It was over personality. It was over lifestyles. It was over, a million different things over the years that, we all like the family that have good years and bad years. And we just had quite a few bad years lately. But that's all sort of broken down now, where, you know, the first time the three of us got together to actually do the music was very strange. It was all like, here we are. But, you know, 20 minutes in, it was cool. We were laughing. We were having fun.
Did you all fall into some of the same patterns that you used to?
Sure, we all sort of have our personalities, you know, our own personalities, but we also have our personalities within the group. And they sort of started coming out and showing themselves again.
But I mean, it's been like 25 years, so your personalities have all changed
sure.
a little.
Oh, yeah. Yes, but, you know, it's still when you put that combination together, you get a similar attitude. Mm-hmm. And we know each other so well. I mean, we were so close, you know, through the 60s and through the 70s and 80s. It wasn't like we never spoke to each other or we never met. We just had never worked together. So over the last 3 years, we've been working together on and off. So, you know, the ice was melting really fast.
There's a box set of Beatles recordings that were made at the BBC in the 1960s when you were regular guests on a radio show.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite track from that we can play?
Baby, It's You. Is that on there?
Yes.
Well, why don't you play that one?
Why'd you choose it?
I choose it because it's really a smooth track. I'm trying to drag up my memory of all those tracks because there's like 50 of them on the record. And I felt that one was really smooth and, you know, it was real easy and it sounded great.
Okay.
Sha-la-la-la-la, it's not the way you smile that touched my heart. Sha-la-la-la-la, it's not the way you kiss that tears me apart. Well, many, many, many nights roll by. I sit alone at home and I cry over you. What can I do? Cause baby, it's you.
Sha la 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 la.
Baby, it's you.
Sha.
Oh, my guest is Ringo Starr. Can we talk a little bit about life before the Beatles?
Sure.
Well, you grew up in Liverpool. What was your neighborhood like?
Well, I was born at a very early age.
Yeah, right.
My neighborhood was real working class. I remember being conscious from a very early age that I wanted to get out of there because it was dark. It was just dark. It was just a dark neighborhood, you know. It was like they needed more streetlights at night. But, of course, it was my neighborhood as a child, and I have, you know, wonderful memories of it. And the thrilling thing is that, you know, my memory of it, because I'd left it for years, was like, you know, this childhood memory that I had all these big avenues that we used to walk down. And then I went back and there's all these really narrow streets. So the memory plays games. But it was a loving neighborhood. I mean, the school was 3 minutes walk away. So, you know, it was a real neighborhood. There was a pub on nearly every corner, which I got to a little later. You know, and that, there was a park I used to walk to. One of my ambitions, which my mother used to tell me often, was I wanted to be a tramp. And so we used to walk everywhere. One of the reasons was, of course, because we couldn't afford to take a car or take a limo in those days, or a bus even. So we used to walk a lot. And I used to love that. And there was parks around us. So it was a very poor neighborhood, but childhood memories make it quite romantic.
My guest is Ringo Starr. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Ringo Starr. I know your father left the family, I think, when you were 3.
Yeah, he'd had enough.
So did your mother have a way of making money?
Yeah, she worked any job she could find. You know, I mean, I come from a working class family, but they call it lower working class when you've only got one parent. But my mother, God bless her, she did anything from scrubbing steps to working in a fruit shop to working in pubs, anything she could to support us because he forgot that part of the bargain.
Right. Mm. Now, I know when you were young, you had 2 long hospital stays.
Mm-hmm.
When you were 6, your appendix burst and you ended up getting an internal infection.
Peritonitis, mm-hmm. It's called, yeah. And that was pretty dangerous. It's still dangerous today, but in 1947, it was very dangerous.
So you were in the hospital for about a year.
I was in a year because 6 months in, I was getting rather well, and I got excited, and I fell out the bed.
Oh, no.
And ripped open all these stitches in my stomach, so they had to dive in again and sew me up.
Oh, gosh.
So we're lucky to be here, Terry.
Yeah. Well, then you got sick again when you were 13.
I know.
Well, tuberculosis, was it?
Yeah, but that was from the area I lived in.
Industrial stuff?
Where I lived, like, not every other home, but it was like, you know, six or seven cases in every street where people were just in the living room dying of TB because they didn't have a cure, of course. Mm-hmm. And again, God, you know, shone his light on me in 1953 or 54 when they discovered streptomycin. And that's what saved me. So they shipped me off to a greenhouse in the country.
A greenhouse? Is it like, well, a sanitarium?
Yeah, just a huge greenhouse where instead of flowers, they put all his kids in there and let us breathe some decent air for a change and gave us streptomycin. And a year later, I came out of there.
So how did you keep busy while you were sick? Had music entered your life yet? Were you listening
where,
to a lot of it?
That's where it entered my life, was because to keep us busy, besides letting us knit, they used to let us knit dishcloths.
Oh, wow.
Which is really exciting.
Yeah.
And then, so some teacher would come in with musical instruments, being drums, tambourines, maracas, triangles, all percussive stuff. And she'd put this big screen, I'm trying to let you visualize it out there, Radio Land, big white paper with red notes for the drums, and yellow notes for the tambourines, and green notes for the triangles. And so she would point to these different colored symbols, and we would either hit whatever instrument we had. Well, I had a drum the first session, and I really loved it. And so they came back like a couple of weeks later, and they tried to give me another instrument, but I only wanted the drum, and that's where I really fell in love with drums.
So what was it like for you after you were sick to be playing an instrument that's so physically taxing?
Well, I didn't have an instrument for years later. I made my first kit when I came out of hospital out of biscuit tins and firewood. And then when I was about 16, I got a bass drum. That's all I had, was a big bass drum. And then when I was 18, I got my first kit. So I'd strengthened up by then.
And how old were you when you were actually playing in a band?
1 month later.
After you got the kit?
Yeah. Because I was really lucky, because if in those days, if you had the instrument, you were in the band. And because it was skiffle, so it was real easy. So that's how the guy next door, it was called Eddie Miles, but we formed the Eddie Clayton Skiffle Group, and he was the guitarist, and my best friend Roy Trafford was the other guitarist, and we got another guy on T-chess bass, and we just went out there and played.
Now, when did you start playing rock and roll?
Very soon afterwards. I left that band, joined another skiffle group, and then I joined a rock and roll band called Rory Storm and the Hurricanes. And we were still sort of folky rock, and Johnny Guitar, our guitarist, we were playing the famous Cavern Club in Liverpool, and he brought a radio in to plug into. And, you know, you can imagine the size of your speaker on a radio. And he plugged into that, and they threw us off because we were playing rock and roll, as we should have just been playing skiffle and folk blues. So, and then it started. We just went from there, and everyone got amplifiers, of course, and we were off.
Ringo Starr. You can see Ringo reunited with George Harrison and Paul McCartney later this month on ABC TV on the documentary The Beatles Anthology. This is Fresh Air.